Welcome to The Jewish Diasporist, a podcast exploring the political, social, and cultural implications of life in diaspora. I'm one of your hosts, Zach Smerin. The World Union of Jewish Students holds its annual congress over the new year. Aside from electing the organization's leadership, it's also an opportunity for national representatives and other participants from all over the world to come together in person. While the most recent conference took place like a week ago, I will be retelling to Ben today my participation in the only conference that I ever went to, which was last year in Prague. As you may imagine, I was left deeply frustrated by the experience. My criticisms aren't aimed at any particular people. Rather, I think the flaws of Wujis come from a lack of resources and engaged perspectives that can believe that we can aim for more than what currently exists. This episode is a bit less structured. I vent. I yap, even. I spill some tea, even if my memories are already a bit fuzzy. I hope that you can understand that my frustrations come from a sense of caring. Institutions such as Wujis could be an important stepping stone towards ideas of Jewish diasporic self-determination and national cultural autonomy. I speak about the participants, the location, the events, the conference, and ultimately why our student listeners, who may feel alienated from our communal institutions, should understand and participate in their national, regional, and global Jewish student unions. They are your organizations as much as they are of those who currently monopolize them. As usual, I'd like to give a big thank you to all of our donors, supporters, and audience. If you like what we are doing here, please rate our show on your podcast platform of choice. It helps us reach new people. Follow us on Instagram at The Jewish Diasporist Pod. Every donation, like, follow, and share helps us build a positive Jewish future and keeps this show on the air. Hey everyone, I am finally ready to do something that I've wanted to do for a long time. This is our first recording that we are doing in 2025, and I will take you back to the long, long time ago in 2023, even more recently, December 2023, even more recently, end of December 2023. You get the point, it's not that long ago. However, it has been a while since I wanted to record this retrospective, and it's about the 2023-2024 Congress of the World Union of Jewish Students, which I participated in. I previously participated in the Congresses of the Union of Jewish Students in Britain and Ireland. Ooh, I am sorry, Ben is here as well with me to join, but I participated in them several times. Once I didn't participate, some I participated online, some I participated in person. Afterwards, I graduated from the British to the European level. My first conference of UJS was 2020, then 2021, that was during COVID, so that was all online. 2022 was, I was not there. And 2023, I was with you, Ben, and 2024, I was there with others. And now I'm no longer there. Then I graduated from the British to the European level, going to SummerU in 2023 to Spain, which you can listen to me speak about on episode 13 and 14 of The Jewish Diasporist. It's so crazy, we're actually getting close to 50 episodes. I remember doing that so much. I really enjoy that episode 13 because I gave the platform to quite a few students from various different countries in Europe that you do not hear perspectives too much from.
I will say, I think those episodes are really underappreciated. I think what you did was really cool to see. Elevating some of those smaller communities, especially in the Balkans and Turkey, I think is really valuable and not something we see a lot of people doing. And I think building on episodes 13 and 14 and going back to episode 2 even, and where Zach and my organizing partnership really began, it's really important to think about how student politics, student movements, which have really been in the spotlight, especially since the spring of 2024, are central to movements for social change. I mean, I'm not going to uplift any particular perspective, but many revolutions were born in universities. The Cuban Revolution began in the University of Havana, at least to an extent. And it's really valuable to think about this as the next generation making an impact in the world in a way that is truly transformational. or can be.
There is life outside of the campus, but I do think that those episodes are very much worth checking out. I think actually episode 14, the one where I get into like the nitty-gritty of democracy, and so those structures actually are least listened to episode. But nevertheless, I think it's important. As a content creator, you always have to balance what you know people want to listen to and what you want to produce. And that episode 14 is certainly one that, for me, is an episode that I wanted to produce because I wanted there to be a record of it. And likewise, earlier, the episode actually that was supposed to be accompanying the European Union of Jewish Students podcast, I don't think that ever got actually released. So the people there that wanted to listen to, for example, I think the Macedonian Jewish student rep, sorry about that, but that's not our fault. We always publish ours on time and never, never get late. Well, sometimes, but we do always get everything out in the end, including this episode. So after that graduation from British to European, I moved to the world level. I reached the highest point that you could of Jewish student politics, the Congress of WUJUS. Now, we already have covered a little bit of WUJUS because we had the president of WUJUS on, not specifically to talk about the organization too much. There were other subjects, and go check out episode 19 for that. But today, I want to specifically focus on how WUJUS works, not so much on the day-to-day basis, because I am not qualified to speak about that to a significant extent, but I do know how some of the major decision-making takes place from my experience at a conference. I didn't go to the conference this year for very specific reasons, as will be a little bit clear, as well as I didn't go to the conference before, but I do have testimonies from people, or not testimonies here in the podcast, but I have heard quite a bit from people who have been to either of those. So I'll be sure to integrate that to what you're learning about here.
Yeah, and going back to episode 19, we did have a conversation with Alana Green that we reposted as episode 34, which was initially a long introduction that we recorded over November 2023. And it was actually separated from the episode on the request of Yana. And do we want to say more about why we separated those? It might be kind of obvious if you think about it a little bit. But we were really grateful to have Yana be able to share some of her own heritage and the cultural traditions that are from her people and the mountain Jews and in Russia, which is a truly underrepresented Jewish community around the world, one of the many. Do you want to say more about that before you move on?
It will be pretty clear when we tell you that upon request, we were told to re-upload Yana's conversation separately. And then we also decided that even though Alana is no longer part of our team, their conversation with us was useful enough, and during a very hectic time in June, we re-uploaded it separately. So that still exists. Let's get on to WUJUS. So WUJUS hosts a conference every year, like UJS, like EUJS. There's nothing particularly special about that. What's interesting, I've subdivided some of my thoughts, and bear in mind, it has been a year. I have thought about some of these things for a while now that I wanted to say, but in terms of the broad strokes, I think I can still nevertheless outline a pretty interesting idea of how things go on. I wanted to write about this right after the WUJUS conference, but unfortunately, some Jewish leftist publications do not find that particularly interesting. So I'm not going to mention any names there, but here goes. When it comes to who participates in WUJUS, you overwhelmingly see, as you might imagine, that it's the union, National Jewish Student Union leaders that form the bulk core of who is able to participate. Now, when it comes to how much does it cost actually to be able to travel and take part in this event that takes over, you know, 3 or 4 days?
I mean, it is a continent-wide or really global conference, but where does it tend to be held? Because clearly that's going to be a big cost difference if people are coming from nearby countries versus people coming from thousands of miles away.
So WUJUS as an organization is headquartered in Israel, and its president actually has to live in Israel, which is an interesting subject that if I had more access to documentation and also discussions that happened at this year's conference, I was told, then I would be able to get into that more. I'm going to sort of leave that in our back pocket. And even one might say for logistical reasons, Israel is not the worst place to organize a Jewish global student union conference, aside from all like the political ramifications. However, you might remember that December 2023 took place not long after October 7th. And so preparations for all sorts of global events that were to bring people together, it was quite unsure from the perspective of months in advance if they were able to take place. So it was actually one of the last minute decisions of Wojcik to move the conference. And they moved the conference to Prague in the Czech Republic, which made it for me much easier to go to, since Prague is only a few hours train from Poland.
Was there any particular reason why Prague stepped up, or was it just kind of a convenience thing? Because there is some significance for Prague, I'm sure, within Jewish history.
Certainly, but I don't think that was the primary way of going about it. Prague was considered, I think, for two main reasons. One is that the Czech Jewish Student Union is very, very active, and we have had people from Chisinau there. And I must say, for organizing a conference of that size with over 100 students in the span of, you know, maybe 2 months right on the way, they did a very good job, like in terms of students leading the way. When it comes to speaking about that 2023 conference, I actually have very little to criticize the Czech Jewish Student Union and the organizers, all of them that did a very good job to make people feel welcome. There is also the fact that there was repeated a few times during the conference that the Czech government is generally considered to be one of the more pro-Israel ones in Europe, and considering it a safe place of that kind. To what extent this was something that was a defining factor, I think, is more limited. I think it's more a question that they had a very good group that was active over there. There's also an important factor to be had that even when I'm discussing the Czech group, another important factor is that there was actually a deadly shooting at the University of Prague about a week before the conference. Nothing that was related politically, but it was very distressful. It was very distressing for the organizers of it. So even more so, I think that credit where credit is due. I will go a little bit about how the conference itself took place, but when it comes to who participates in these, Jewish student union leaders from various different countries, and it was very interesting actually just to be able to meet, you know, people who can come from Australia, who can come from Mexico, who can come from Argentina, all these kinds of countries that I did not have any sort of experience of Jewish student life then, just being able to have any contact saying like, hi, what's it like? How is it different? And what's the same? When it comes to the cost of it, some unions do have the privilege of their costs being covered for travel and for staying. As you can imagine, for a mainstream Jewish communal conference, there is a emphasis put on kosher accommodation and kosher food, which does bring prices up. Of course, they are subsidized to a certain extent, and they are at least somewhat differentiated. I was lucky because I did actually, and I will disclose this, I did get a discount. The base price for participating was $460. And I personally, I don't know if this was something that applied to everyone, but it was communicated to me by the president that I got a price of $380. Now, most Jewish student union leaders of various unions got that cost subsidized. The British Union of Jewish Students does not subsidize that cost to members who go there. And since nobody from the National Council, the president, only one person from the National Council who got their financing covered another way, of those people who came from Britain, as well as many, many others, they got their financing to go through the World Jewish Congress. The World Jewish Congress, which is financed by Ronald Lauder, and he's the president of it, operates a program for people to participate. And I think that this is something important to speak about when it comes to the way in which mainstream Jewish communal spaces talk about Jewish leadership and future Jewish leadership. It's really doesn't have much to do, I think, in creating democratic structures within the community or like leaders being elected or coming out from the body as such. It's more a question of we have a idea of what community leadership should be. Let us basically engage in talent recruiting. You know, if you show a little bit of initiative, maybe we'll take you to a seminar to New York or to Israel and you'll be able to meet with community leadership of the past and see what it truly means to create community leadership. I think it's a little bit of like a grooming strategy for future leaders. And the term of Shtadlon, like former community representatives that interacted between the Jewish population of medieval ghettos and like the king, it's sort of like a sort of continuation of that, at least in the spiritual sense. Like there's a creation of a new elite within the community that happens through that process.
Interesting. Can you say anything more about Lauder? I've not actually heard of him, and Is there any reason that he's both funding it and is the president? That doesn't seem very democratic.
I don't want to get into, like, sure, too much of the internal processes of the World Jewish Congress. I don't know the internal structure of it. But Ronald Lauder is considered to be, I think, is the president of the World Jewish Congress. This is the kind of model that exists and for Jewish student leadership at an international level. This is quite different from the way you see it in America, although it might be similar. That's not the kind of experience that I have. It is interesting. I remember speaking to the one Jewish student communal leader from a smaller European country, and who basically said that if you do not have the kind of assistance that comes from a program like the World Jewish Congress, there isn't the kind of resources that you can get to, for example, get everybody together for a Shabbaton, like a Shabbos dinner that brings people an international level, like travel costs, that kind of stuff. And I think that it is, in some ways, it's a form of like soothing over structural problems that come from the fact that Jewish communal institutions are not particularly strong or democratic, by just, you know, saying we'll find the best community leaders, we'll bring them in together, and they will have the resources to be able to just dictate how things happen. And very little alternative comes from that. The fact that everybody participates in these kinds of programs through the World Jewish Congress, or even that there is the kind of student leadership that comes from conferences like Summer U or the Woodges Congress, does create a kind of cliqueiness a little bit. If not cliqueiness, that might be too strong of a word, but certainly a friend group. Like, you know people that come to these different events, and, you know, we'll see you at next Summer U, we'll see you at Woodges Congress, or we'll see you at this Lauder event. I remember seeing at least a few dozen people that I saw a few months ago in Spain.
That sounds a lot like, I mean, a lot of Jewish youth programming. We often said, grew up going to NIFTY, which is the Reform Jewish Youth Movement, which is significantly smaller and weaker than it once was since COVID really disrupted the continuities that made it so much of a intergenerational space in terms of like people growing up in the space, seeing the people that grow up. Like, it was intertwined with the camp system, as in the URJ Reform Jewish Summer Camp system, not, of course, any other camp system. We talked a lot about this in episode 19 in the introduction we had with Alana. We did talk a little bit, I recall, about the connection between WJCS and the World Jewish Congress, but how much autonomy is there within these things? I mean, there seems like there's a lot of connections, both socially and institutionally, but there's also, of course, all different levels with the fact that this is just a student movement. And how does this relate to the wider, like, for example, in the Czech Republic, how does that relate to the wider institutional makeup and, like, communal autonomy within Czech Republic and the wider WJCS system? Just thinking, because my first impression of UJS was that it had a little bit more democracy than, say, Hillel in the United States, but upon, of course, further examination, it doesn't seem all that democratic.
Well, we will get to that when we speak about Hillel. I think there is a meaningful distinction to be had within organizations that at least claim the mantle of being democratic and have certain democratic procedures within them. And there are elections that take place. And if you want to make the argument that these Jewish student elections are not particularly, like, there is a wide variety of, you know, political movements or social engagement or galvanization of media or turnout, you can make that argument, but that's not an argument specifically against Jewish student elections. That's an argument in the way in which a lot of student elections take place in general. And we'll get to that in a moment, but what I want to speak about a little bit is the kind of events that take place. When it comes to what was offered, there was no sort of, you know, need that you needed to come to any particular event or not. It is quite relaxed. The way in which Summer U worked is that while not being able to participate in any events, you had access to the entire vacation resort, basically, and you could just chill by the pool or read or hang out with others, and there were events. But it wasn't, when you're organizing a conference like this in Prague, there is a bit more of a sort of official presentation of it, but nevertheless, there is no requirement to participate in events. Of the events that did take place, primarily, as you could expect, were primarily related to ongoing events, and specifically anti-Semitism as basically the unifying force that all Jewish student campus activists all experience and have to work together on to defeat.
What definition of anti-Semitism are they using?
The way in which anti-Semitism is understood is not by working through the IHRA definition. There's a general understanding that anti-Semitism exists everywhere on campuses. It's on the rise now, and it's something that has to be defeated. There isn't the kind of, and this might come as a surprise to the highly anti-Zionist mind in the audience, this wasn't a place, and I think similar things can be said about UJS to a large extent. These are not places in which there is a high level of we need to support Israel no matter what that comes up as the primary point that needs to be hammered on the head over and over again. I think what is more the case is that, you know, support for Israel and support for the status quo is presented as the only logical solution. It's just, it's, you know, there's nothing else that can happen, but it's done sort of by implication. It's not badgered on your head that, you know, we must support Israel. These voices do come out, but it's not the overwhelming message of it. The overwhelming message of it that I felt is that there is campus anti-Semitism October 7th, and which, you know, it did take place 2 months afterwards, so it obviously makes sense that everything would be impacted by that. But that is the kind of perception that what unites Jewish students, which, you know, to me seems quite disappointing as the sort of thing that brings us together. And I will speak a little bit later as to what I think there could be some alternatives that could be created on occasion of something like Woj's conference.
So when they're talking about anti-Semitism, I mean, these are substantive events, and I understand that this was just a couple of months after October 7th, so I could see them really flattening the equation between, like, anti-Semitism in Israel, as you could say October 7th might have been an anti-Semitic attack, which I'd say is really contestable as an assertion. But are they talking about, like, what anti-Semitism looks like? Are they just talking about specific events? Are there larger questions and space for conversations about what anti-Semitism is and potential alternatives to just Israel as the only logical answer?
Well, I will say this. There is absolutely no space for discussing any sort of Palestinian suffering. That was the overwhelming experience, the overwhelming implication that I received. It didn't come from me speaking out on it and then getting a big backlash. It came just from that this is not part of the conversation. There is, when it comes to anti-Semitism and the way in which anti-Semitism is understood, there is no sense, I think, of understanding anti-Semitism in a way that it can be like a vision of a world without anti-Semitism. It's just, this is like a thing that is always going to exist.
So it's ahistorical.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, the way it's treated as like an overwhelming presence that we might be able to fight against, but also not really substantively like defeat as a social movement. And I don't think that there is much strategy that comes in that. I think there are something that, you know, if you speak about this, you'll be looked as a bit like, oh, you just wish that a better world existed. But I do think that it is worth imagining a world, for example, where, you know, you do not have to have guards outside of synagogues. That doesn't mean that there shouldn't be guards outside of synagogues, because there are terrorist attacks that take place in synagogues and vandalisms and threats. But I think that's what's important in these kinds of spaces, to say, like, what is our end vision? Like, is this just the way things have to be? Is this what unites us as Jewish students, as Jews? What can we actually do? And there are very little in that term, in that way, of possible visions, solutions presented. It's just something that you have to fight against. Like, you have to fight against, I don't know, a locust invasion, right?
So you've said that there really isn't space for conversation about Palestinian suffering. And it just made me think of our experience in the 2023 UJS conference, because this was February 2023. It was before October 7th. Of course, there's ongoing ethnic cleansing, slow motion genocide going on for decades and decades. But I remember going to a conversation about fascism, and I asked a question. It was, what was the name of that organization? It was someone on behalf of, someone on behalf of Hope Not Hate. And I asked the question, how do we confront fascism in our own communities, Jewish fascism? And he was just like, what? He didn't really answer the question. He just kind of sidestepped it. But my point being that really there's not a lot of, it didn't seem like there was a lot of space for conversation, and that they were empowering certain people to give these events and then completely disempowering people that might open up space for alternative conversations and dialogues.
I will say that when it comes to the level of conversation that you can have, and I might be biased with this, but the British Union of Jewish Students is one of the most open spaces for these discussions to take place within mainstream Jewish communal institutions. And I do think that there are, what you have in Britain at Jewish student conventions is you do always have a more center-left block and a more right-wing block. Most students don't participate in either of them, but there is a level of discussion that takes place from these perspectives. In Prague, I felt that the British Jewish students were by far the most left-wing. That doesn't mean they necessarily were, but in terms of us being able to even speak out about some of the things, that was actually very interesting to see.
You would not guess that from my experience at that. I mean, sure, I saw that those block politics, but it did sort of feel like it was very hegemonically Zionist, even compared to United States Jewish like student movements.
So what I want to say in this retrospective, and I want to make this absolutely clear to everyone listening, there are always levels to these things, right? It might be tempting if we are, you know, from the perspective, I don't think that this is the way in which we should perceive ourselves, but this is how we are perceived from the outside. If we are on the extreme far left of mainstream Jewish communal discourse, then from that vantage point, everything else can be flattened. And that is not how a lot of the internal dynamics within these spaces take place. And I think that that's important to understand, not to equivocate between, you know, these people might be better than these other people, which may be true or may not be true, but what's important is how to understand the dynamics that are taking place. I don't think that there is anything damaging in understanding the nuances between how different elements and factions within communal institutions interact with each other, if only for the sake of understanding them better and forging our own perspective.
And of course, that's true for all mainstream communal institutions.
Yeah, that's true. That's a general perspective that should take place within all political movements. I mean, the fact that for us, you know, everybody in like the government is like, you know, reactionary or you know, far gone, like can't be reasoned with, doesn't mean that there aren't important nuances to understand with that. And this is absolutely true of what we consider to be, you know, hegemonic Zionist spaces within a Jewish communal, within the Jewish community. I'll say a little bit about events. So when it comes to the discussions of it, that was obviously going to be colored the most. There's no doubt about that. I wanted to speak a little bit about a very interesting experience. I don't remember if I told Ben about this, so we might get his live reaction. So one of the events that took place, so we had a few events around Prague, and generally speaking, all the events that took place around like visiting tourist sites in Prague, that was all those were all great. I really, really enjoyed them. Learned a lot, you know, went to all the different synagogues. I went inside the Spanish synagogue for a service, a Shabbos service. It was the most beautiful synagogue I ever went to. If you are in Prague, please go to the Spanish synagogue. And I say this as someone who loves the Temple synagogue in Krakow, and I think it is one of the most beautiful ones. But the one event that did take place outside in the city for us was a visit, I believe, in the Czech Foreign Ministry, which was a basic tour that we were given, and it seemed to us more something that was a tour of an important government institution that we as important guests within the city were granted to have, which gave a little bit of a, like a Czech context to it as well, and we were given like, you know, the perception of how Czech government tours like to perceive their country's history, which is something that you'll see if you go into the Polish parliament or the Romanian parliament, as I did on a tour once, or I believe in the, you know, in the United States Congress. We had a very interesting situation. We had a very nice tour guide who gave us, at certain points where we would stop, he would ask certain questions. What is this statue? What does this mean? What does this name come from? And I can't remember what I said anymore, but I answered one of those questions correctly. I think it had something to do with ancient Greek mythology. Anyway, at a certain point, we get to a, basically like a conference hall. There is a table at the front. We sit, you know, there's about, you know, 100 of us. So there's people sitting, looking at the main conference table that has various different spaces to sit up front. At this point, after about an hour of the tour guide says, okay, everyone who answered the question correctly, come up stage. And so I'm like, okay, what's going on? And so what happened was that at that exact point, Anna Azari, Israeli ambassador to the Czech Republic, comes into the room and she takes a place at the table next to us. I knew who Anna Azari was because she was previously the Israeli ambassador to Poland. And in 2018, her name came up in public discourse a lot because there was a big row between the Polish and the Israeli governments. I'm not going to get into all of it. Both sides were being very stupid. What happened was that the tour guide in the Czech foreign ministry decided that he wanted to give a presentation about like some of the history of Czech Jews and of the Czech lands as a whole. It didn't take very long. We were sitting up front. At some point, about, I don't know how long it was in, I lost all sense of time when it comes to this, but at some point, the Israeli ambassador, Anna Azari, just sort of like gestures to him and like says like, hello, I don't have time, I need to go. And so he quickly like rushes through the last slides. At that point, like it transitions into like, oh, hello, we've got the Israeli ambassador in the room. She is so happy that the World Union of Jewish Students Congress is happening in Prague, and she will gladly speak a little bit to you and answer questions from people at the stage.
Oh my God. So you got to ask her questions.
So I was sitting like, there was like seven of us at the front. There's a photo of us looking at her. And there's like seven of us, and I am fourth from her. They're sitting to my right, and I am just there. I am terrified. I do not know what should I do? Like, what is the best thing that I can do in this situation? Because I have like 5 minutes, but I am in front of absolutely everyone. And at this stage, there are like some people who know me and my political views a little bit better. But most people don't. And this is like day two of the conference. I don't want to be like, with all due respect, like all the cause of like stuff, I don't want to be either like thrown out or like ostracized by everyone over the next 2 days, because I feel like that there is something that I can do. But the thing is, I am sitting at a table with nothing. I don't even have like, I can't look at my phone. I can't Google anything. Like the table is not closed from the front, so people can like see my legs. Like I can't take anything out from my phone or Google stuff. Like if I had the possibility to ask a question, I would do it, but I couldn't because like I was under so much pressure and I didn't know what is the best thing to do. I had to like memorize something. So finally, I was not listening to what the other people were saying, right? But finally, it comes to me. And I just sort of like wanted to, as much as I possibly could, I can't remember exactly how I phrased that, probably couldn't remember it like 3 minutes later. But I basically made the point that how are we supposed to like be represented by an Israeli government that like contains open racists and anti-Palestinian racists? Bear in mind that I do not have a microphone with me and I am super nervous. So I don't know if people heard my question. I don't know if I was like physically like shaking because I know people, but like what do I do in this situation? So I like mumble out a question, and Anna Azari, of course, you know, professional diplomat. But before Anna Azari can respond to it, I get a shout from the front of someone like, Ambassador, I would like to say that Israel will always remain a Jewish and democratic state.
Center left BS?
Yeah, like, oh my God, like I'm not the only one. Like,
I mean, framing a question about that specific topic you're gonna have liberals on your side.
Yeah. So like my sort of, if I was to like have a strategy in this moment, my aim was like to like draw a bit of a wedge, like to sort of like say that this isn't like the person that you like, things are still happening in this situation. And she said some like diplomatic answer that like I didn't do like a great job. I also wasn't in the position to like grill her on specific stuff. I don't think so. I think that was the most entertaining thing out of the whole event. So that was probably the most like entertaining part of the week.
We should reach back out to her. Maybe we could have her on the show.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Anna Azari, if you're listening to this, I'm a big fan. I like doing this in situations when I have a confrontational questions, is that I like say something positive about a person so they think I'm going to compliment them and then you like reverse it. So I tried doing that with her as well because I knew about her experience in Poland. And like she was absolutely hounded anti-Semitically by the Polish right, because of course she was. Anyway, when it came to the actual conference itself, because we are still speaking about the 3 days that come before the actual conference. At this time, you know, we're having social events. It's Shabbos. We do have Dollar. There are like some, you know, events. I don't go to all of them because I can't feel like going into discussions on like post-October 7th anti-Semitism in a place that completely refuses to recognize anything that's like going on in Gaza that doesn't include that as part of it. So it is quite tiring. Thankfully, I do have a few friends and my partners there as well. When it comes to the Congress itself, it's very similar to how it looked at the European Union of Jewish Students and the Union of Jewish Students. I don't want to completely repeat myself, apart from a few things. When it comes to when it took place,
was there the same sort of motions in terms of laying forward the platform of the organization?
Yes, and like at EUJS, motions have to be submitted by a national union, which to me seems like a very anti-political discussion perspective, because why couldn't there be delegates from several different countries working together on a motion? Why does it have to come from a nation?
Can't have a transnational movement actually organize itself and try to change it from within. That would be too democratic.
Yeah, I mean, that is like that is what that protects it against, right? If that's something that needs to be, that an organization needs to be protected from. Now, I'm going to say at what time Łódź's Congress took place. And I'm going to challenge everybody listening to think about why this is not a good time to organize a Congress. Or maybe just, you know, I don't have to load the question. What are your thoughts, on Ben, on organizing a World Union of Jewish Students Congress on the 1st of January in the morning?
So everyone's hungover when it's a bunch of college students right after New Year's.
Yeah.
Let's talk politics.
Yeah, because that was a New Year's Eve party.
Gets hammered and goes to sleep and wakes up regretting drinking and never wants to do it ever again. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I mean, this is truly the environment for generating great political discussion and debate.
Was there any difference? Did they let there be any campaigning? I know they didn't do that at UJS. There was no campaigning until the actual...
Ah, now you're getting to the board elections of UJS, which is itself a very interesting thing. Because if I remember correctly, there are 11 members of the UJS board that are elected for a year. And 7 of them are representatives of specific regions. And 1 is a representative of the European Union of Jewish Students. Now,
what are the different regions?
So what regions do you think that there are represented automatically on the board?
So I'd say Europe. Well, you said Europe.
Yeah.
I would say, I'm going to guess they're probably going to say Israel as its own region.
We'll get to Israel. Yeah. Then the Israeli candidate. Yeah.
South America.
Yes.
North America, which is weird considering there's
no US American Union representative, remember, because what is a World Union of Jewish Students without an American organization to join it? There's a few. I can't name all of them.
I remember there being like a Mexican Union of Jewish Students, which is why I said North America. Maybe they include that. I could imagine maybe former Soviet Union would have its own representation.
I can't remember all the categories, so I can't exactly say it right now, but one is Australia, for example. And then there's a few contested seats for everyone. Now, 7 out of those 11 are not contested because, generally speaking, if a seat was reserved, for example, for the European Union of Jewish Students, the EUJS is going to give its own candidate for that. No. No. No.
Is there any voting within EUJS for their candidate? Any primary? No. Why would there be?
And if we are already talking about the Israeli candidate, the National Union of Israeli Students, which is a part of EUJS, does not publicly criticize the Israeli government. Ever.
Of course not. Ever.
No.
Is that a specific policy they're not allowed to?
Yep.
Wow, that's not democratic.
And so when we spoke, this took place at during the hustings.
Hustings isn't a term that Americans use.
The Q&A. The Israeli candidate was given an opportunity to condemn the government's policies on when it comes to the judicial reform, and also the representatives of the far right in the Israeli government. And they refused to do so. Now, would this be particularly surprising for you? I please don't go and harass this person or even think of like doing any sort of stuff like this, because I don't want to get in trouble and have that conversation. Yes, exactly.
Attack systems, not people.
But what I said about levels as well, I had a few, two basically interactions with this person. When I speak about levels of stuff, I would like to make it absolutely clear that there is a significant difference, whatever like campus you're in, and like the annoying Zionist advocates that are there, like stand with us types, they're bad. But in terms of like what kind of interactions you can have, and I'm talking about like the worst people that you will interact with as a Jewish student, I'm not talking about like the majority of Jewish students here, right? This person grew up in a settlement near Jericho and volunteered for the IDF after October 7th. And so, like, actual colonizer, like, I know the term gets overused, but in terms of, like, actual having to interact with a person like that, it's not that it's tiring in itself. It's not the point that that individual is, like, in itself, like, a person that you can't be around. It's that you're in a situation where you feel that you can't say anything about it, like, in terms of criticism. And I did say stuff about it, and I did get reprimanded. It wasn't even, I went up afterwards and criticized them specifically when it came to the policy of criticizing Israel, which, by the way, is completely insane, because, and I know, again, this might come to a shock to some people, but most Israeli students are not far-right settlers, right? Like, there are left-wing, you know, anti-war movements. Israeli students tend to be about as left-wing as students anywhere else, except in their specific context. That doesn't mean that there's like not stuff that they can be criticized for. But the point is that this is not a representative person of the Israeli student body, except apparently they are, because that's who was nominated by the National Union of Israeli Students. And so, yeah, that was fun. And yeah, one thing that I will mention here is that unlike at the European Union of Jewish Students, I was a delegate of the Union of Jewish Students, because they didn't have enough people to spread the votes equally enough, because nobody from the union leadership, apart from one person on the National Council who was a louder scholar, so they got paid to come there. They had to subdivide the votes. And on one particular resolution, there was, and again, I'm not going to be able to remember the exact wording of it after a year, but there was a wording that basically stated that Woodges needs to be uncritically supportive of the state of Israel. I can't say the exact wording of it. I could probably be able to find it at some point. So if there is anybody who gets particularly offended from Woodges for me recording and talking about this, I will find the words for it and what exactly was, because it was passed as Woodges policy. It was the only debate that took place, basically, on it, because there were critical voices. However, when it came to the discussion of this motion, there was a real atmosphere of fear from a lot of people in terms of publicly declaring their opposition, because after 4 days of like this sort of political presentation that I've described, being like opposed to something that is related to supporting Israel 2 months after October 7th, even if that is not what you politically want, is challenging. And so a lot of people said that they will only support it if others support it, or they said that they do not feel comfortable opposing this in public. And some of the people that did oppose it publicly afterwards were basically called pro-Hamas, including what I found very disgusting. A lot of the Czech organizers, you know, the people that, you know, worked their asses off in a very short amount of time to organize a very complicated conference for hundreds of people, like, they expressed the slightest bit of opposition towards a motion that was presented, and like, they were getting like messages from people from other unions, and like, why are you a traitor? Why are you anti-Israel? Why are you anti-Zionist? Which is ridiculous. I mean, and it shows the kind of political atmosphere that can be created by that kind of environment. Something that was not always the case in Woodges. We know this from the 1960s and the 1970s, that there were significant ideological debates and discussions that took place in Woodges and other Jewish communal institutions. And this wasn't the kind of atmosphere that was created there in the slightest.
Do you know what the margin was like in that vote?
I can't remember. I think it was something like 80-20 in the end. No, not particularly. But the reason why I mention this is because the way in which voting works, similar to EUJS, is that each country is basically responsible for its own delegation and how they subdivide votes. I'm not going to get into how it completely takes place, like in every single case scenario. Go listen to the episode 14. But in the case of this one motion, I was part of that British delegation, and there was opposition towards it from several people. Now, the person that was responsible for whipping the British vote was someone who used to be active in UJS, but no longer lives in Britain, is no longer an elected person by UJS, and is no longer employed by UJS. They're someone who is previously organized a few years in the past. And now, since they come to all these international conferences, they are trusted to be the person that takes care of UJS voting by the union leadership in London. Now, I and one other delegate out of, I think, the seven of us that there were, we were elected by our local Jewish student societies. I was secretary at Oxford, and one other person was in particular elected in a Juni society, so one of the largest Jewish student societies in Britain. Bearing in mind that both Oxford and this other society get turnout in elections and just general participation that's larger than many of the unions that were present in that room. So we did have a mandate to be there, at least I think that is a solid argument. And we basically said, and not just the two of us, but in the end, we were the two people that raised our votes against this. We were told that if we do not like this motion, we do not need to vote for it. We can abstain, but we should not vote no by the whip. And I said, sorry, I don't answer to you. I would like to speak to the president of my union, UJS, who, God bless Ed Isaac, was on vacation that day, because it's the 1st of January in the morning. So I could not get in contact with him. The only person that responded and basically said, follow the whip, was a sabbatical officer who is not elected by UJS, because they're employed, and those employees are not chosen by the student body. So I basically felt that I have a mandate to do something, and I spoke in opposition to this motion, and I cited the UJS constitution, that UJS is not a Zionist organization, that it does not take a position, and I cited motions. Again, I was quite trembling in that environment.
I just remember in the 2023 UJS conference when someone did something kind of similar, when there was a motion coming up for renewal that no one had looked at because people only looked at the ones that were new motions, not renewing motions after 2 years or whatever it is. And someone, they were just heckling the person that mentioned Israeli apartheid at the front of the room. And it was pretty disgusting to see this sort of cliquish mentality being used to bash people speaking up for human rights.
In defense of that situation, I do remember the chair of that meeting from UJS saying that this is unacceptable behavior, but did not punish them further. Meanwhile, I got punished the year later at the conference for whispering to someone who was whispering to me whilst another person was speaking as a warning. So, you know, these standards in conferences get out of control. But what happened was that I was basically told, do not vote against this, abstain, by a person who is not a Jewish student in Britain and is just relied on because they like coming to these conferences and that side. And I just voted against it. So at that point, the whip went up to the desk and said that these two delegates are no longer recognized.
Wow. What does that mean? So did you lose your vote?
Yep.
Wow, that's pretty fucked up.
Yep, and so I took it, you know, like, yeah, I've been in similar situations before. However, the person that I was with who did not have that kind of experience of ostracization was very disappointed and saddened by that. I know that we were not the only two ones, on that British delegation that were opposed to it, but I'm not going to say anything further in that regard.
Was there a number that also abstained in addition to you two opposing it?
Yeah, I mean, I could say even more, but I'm not going to, because I didn't ask for permission to speak about these things, and maybe if I did, I would feel more comfortable. I have to ask for forgiveness for people listening in, because I've felt like saying some of this stuff off of my chest for a while. One also interesting thing is that whilst we were voting for the board of WGIS, which we got the right to do so, and by Jewish Student Union standards, the voting system was actually decent, like it worked. But we had a UJS Jewish Agency emissary that came to Prague.
And this is someone you had already interacted with before?
No. So I don't know if we mentioned this during episode 2, but I was removed preemptively from a seminar at UJS conference in 2023 because that one seminar was being held by one of these emissaries from the Jewish Agency that works within UJS, basically like volunteering for a year. The reason for that was that I had previously been involved in drama with one of the other UJS emissaries. I did not interact with this particular emissary on any occasion before, except going to an event the previous night in which I didn't do anything. There's a wider discussion that needs to be had about like Israel emissaries that exist in various student movements, youth movements within the Jewish community and diaspora. A lot of the time they are sort of connected to they fit the profile of the organization, like the kind of emissaries that will go to Bnei Akiva won't be the same ones that go to HaShomer HaTzair, for example. But in the case of Prague, there was one of these newer Jewish agency emissaries as part of the UJS team. And whilst we were taking part in the election on our phones, she was looking at our phones.
Yeah, and these emissaries, I mean, we call them mishlachat at Jewish camps, but that's a pretty widespread practice within Jewish youth programming, from my experience. I mean, we just kind of normalize the fact that Israelis come out to all over different places straight out of the army and are playing a role that is almost directly to make people love Israel or love Israeli culture or have an idea of Judaism that is rooted in a connection to what it means to be Israeli.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think you mentioned this once, that like the ex-IDF people at summer camp are like the cool ones that do that. And so I could get into like yapping more about the like some of the UJS conferences that go on and what kind of relationships exist there. But what I wanted to finish on, what I wanted to say is that I wanted to speak about, why is this necessary? Why do I think that this kind of engagement is necessary? As to why there are, you know, national or global Jewish student communal organizations, I think that there is the possibility towards engaging with them and presenting a vision of them as being part of Jewish diasporic self-determination. This is almost something that has to be done by definition, right? Like, if you realize that there is a Jewish student organization in diaspora, like, it should, to some extent, work towards the development of the cultural development and you know, building community. I don't think that what needs to happen is to be there to be like the left-wing version of Woodges. I don't think that's what should be necessarily strived. I think what needs to happen is to, you know, engage in these places as, you know, being the national organizations and them being able to fill a purpose that they currently do not. And you'd think that if there is a World Congress of Jewish Students, like, that's an amazing opportunity. Like, you have Jewish students that come from South Africa, Australia, Mexico, like, countries all over the world, notably not America. But, like, surely there are possibilities for, like, cultural exchanges, possibilities for, you know, developing programming that explores these different connections within communities. Something that continues to baffle me, as a student organization, there is no possibility of exploring or like nurturing Jewish academia and student writing. Like, not obviously not every Jewish student engages in writing about Judaism or Jews, but a lot of them do. And so in a place like, whether it be UJS or EUJS or Woodges, at Woodges, like, why not hold like a panel of like exciting Jewish research like that's happening in all its diversity? Like, give possibility for people for publishing stuff. Woodges doesn't have its own official publication. Woodges barely has any staff. Like, if you compare it, I think it is in the single digits, if anything more than a few, for a global organization. I mean, there's surely possibilities for doing things. I mean, I know that if it's global, then you're going to have people only for a few days. It's very difficult to get things people to coordinate at a global scale. But that's not done. And I think that what needs to happen is that there needs to be a Jewish left presence within these spaces that is able to point these things out and able to say, like, how can you organize a world Jewish student organization that doesn't have any American presence? Because what if you do not have Americans in there as like a voting bloc? You will soon realize that, you know, the what is considered the Overton window of perspectives on Israel-Palestine, like, America shifts that massively to the left. Not even like, you know, like anti-Zionist left, but like two-state solution, like criticism of the Israeli government, self-determination for Palestinians, that kind of, like, talking about Palestinians at all. Like, that's what needs to happen if you want to have a global organization. And also, you know, for people saying that, like, oh, but, like, we're always going to be a minority, or there's no way that we can convince or, like, make it so that Woodges is majority, not Zionist or not pro-Israel, like, perspective on all Jewish student politics. I think that people underestimate the fact that in an environment that is not particularly strong in terms of, like, the political processes that take place, if the only thing that unites, like, think politically, is the, like, support for Israel, quote-unquote, whatever that means, because that's not explored further much either, it's just, like, taken for a given. If there is a group of people, like an organized group, one person is not enough, two people is not enough, three people is not enough. But I think, like, if you have a bunch, like a minion would be amazing. But if you have enough people in that kind of environment, and if they're from different unions, that's even more amazing.
Yeah.
But let's say that, no, this is not what unites us. And I had some of these conversations that, like, if there is to be, like, what unites all of us in here, like, if it's not to be, like, a pure site of social struggle and, like, building community across different Jewish student unions, then you have to say that, like, no, that needs to be our base. We do not have to have, like, a Zionist base for that. And there is also a difference of, like, an organization that has, like, a majority Zionist delegates in a democratic decision-making system, which is likely to be the case for any mainstream Jewish community organization, and, like, an organization that tolerates, you know, all these other, that tolerates, like, perspectives and what you can work on. And if that's the case, then I think that sort of minority presence, if that is not what unites you, can have a really destabilizing impact for the status quo. And so should be looked at and should be taken into as much as it can. And so part of me, you know, engaging in there is just providing for that possibility and understanding.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the fact that there actually is an American Union of Jewish Students. It is tiny and not really all that present. Their Instagram has 204 followers as of recording, and it says American UJS, AMUJS, aspires to unite students on campus in the United States under a peer-led democratic body. And frankly, that's like fair. Like, that's something that I do think the left could actually work to build in the United States, considering that Hillel does not have it. And if you're centering democracy as what you're going for, there could be Jewish leftists coming in doing something different that could then actually, I mean, frankly, infiltrate, not seriously, because there's challenges, but you could work within that to try to say, hey, we're actually going to build that and intentionally use it as a way to open up the window for the WUJIS Overton window.
It's not infiltration if it's your own community. That's a belief that I've had for a long time. Last but not least, I spoke as much as I could for the 2023 WUJIS conference. But just as a final thing for the conference that I didn't go to this year, I sent just something to Ben that he hasn't seen before. Yeah. This is a Instagram post by the World Union of Jewish Students inviting people to meet the candidates for the presidential election.
Just Yana rerunning?
Yeah.
Wow, it's just Yana running for re-election. That's not super democratic, but just means that our interview with her remains relevant. I do think this has been a really interesting conversation. I've learned a lot about your own experience, and I think comparing it to our shared experience in February 2023 is interesting, just to look at how... God, I hate using the word interesting so much. But it's interesting to look at how things could get worse. I remember being there and being like, oh, wow, this is one of the most hegemonically Zionist organizations I've been in. And that's not to say, like, I've probably been in more or as hegemonically Zionist as that, but when it's not really your own a community or one that you're comfortable in and you're much more conscious than you once were, it feels really repressive. You feel the pressure is keeping you silent or trying to keep you silent, and the fact that you did speak up in ways that you did really makes me happy. I'm glad you were able to be there and play a little bit of a role, but it's hopefully only the beginning. Hopefully more people will engage in this work to change it from inside or break it and build something new.
Yeah. I mean, I do have to say, because I feel like I do have tolerance for like pro-Israel talking points and like this sort of hegemonic sense of being the only person in the room that is able to speak up in this kind of environment in a way that, you know, it's not that I think that I do something amazing by doing this, but I do know a lot of people that, you know, say like, I couldn't do this, like I don't feel comfortable in this space, and I understand that. I did feel like in many ways very uncomfortable at it. Like, I had to take time off. I just want to be in my room. I was very happy that my girlfriend was there, just to be like, okay, like, you know, we can talk about these things. You know, there were people in the British delegation that were fine. I met some very interesting people. Some very nice people, even people I disagreed with politically, but who like understood and recognized some of the frustrations that I had and understood them as like legitimate concerns. There are, it's not like dire in the sense. If it is like, if the situation like now is the status quo, I think it's just more the case that we are not organized to present an alternative in these kinds of spaces. And so it's just the case of like, we need to think of what we can offer in that. And so I understand that today has been like a lot of venting and like I need to get it out of me and also like publicize it to a certain extent. But I do think that what we need is we need movement. So this isn't like something that is projected onto one person. I least of all want to be like the one person that is comfortable going to these spaces. Like, no, we need everyone. We need more people. We need to say what we want, and we need to convince people that it's worth it, and we need to change the world for the better.
Absolutely. And I just want to add, I actually just looked at the dates on the American Union of Jewish Students Instagram. It hasn't been active since 2017, 2018. Like, this stuff is not happening from that level, and it's so important for groups like JUT, Judaism on Our Own Terms, that's working to build alternative Jewish communal spaces on college campuses, to really do the groundwork of actually bringing things together at the local level, bringing that up to the national and international level so that we can really build the alternative, because we can't expect that legacy organizations are actually going to ever work in not only our interests, but the interests of all the peoples, and really willing to fight for collective liberation.